Ryan Rama Krishna Rumanita
Rama Krishna Rumanita
Nidhe Manoratam Savam Adhiyam Satchikarah Chokopavishta Paryanke Rama Krishna Rumanita Manoratam Savam Adhiyam Satchikara Chokopavishta Paryanke Rama Krishna Rumanita Nidhe Manoratam Savam Adhiyam Satchikara Vacha. Sri Sukha Devi Goswami said, Sukha, comfortably, Upavishtaha, seated, Haryanke, on a couch, Ramakrishna, by Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, Guru, very much, Manita, honored, Lebhe, he attained, Manaratan, his desires, Sarvan, all, Pati, on the road, Yan, which, Saha, he, Chakraha, had manifested. Translation, Sukadeva Goswami said, having been honored so much by Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, Akura, seated comfortably on a couch, felt that all the desires he had contemplated on the road were now fulfilled. I'll read text 2. Kimalabhyam Bhagavati Prasanneshi Niketane Tathapi Tatpararajanna Hivachanti Kinjana. My dear King, what is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. So there are no purports here. There are purports elsewhere. We'll comment on these verses here anyway, even though there's no purports written here, because they're very important verses which are summing up the mood of pure devotees like Akura, and therefore in order to understand the Srimad Bhagavatam we have to understand the nature of the characters. So Akura, now Sukadeva Goswami is speaking this Srimad Bhagavatam 5,000 years ago, and he is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. And Sukadeva Goswami is telling the story of Krishna's pastimes. And in this particular story, where we are here, we've just finished this section of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna performs his pastimes in Vrindavan. So those pastimes, eternal pastimes, in Vrindavan is where Krishna exhibits his original feature that exists in the topmost portion of the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan. And now, Akrura has come from Mathura, and he is wanting to take Krishna from Vrindavan and bring him to Mathura in order to execute some other pastimes, some other affairs in Mathura. So these pastimes that are existing here, they're replicas of the pastimes that exist in the spiritual world. So the here we are, we're in the material world, which is manifested by the external or the material energy, which is one of God's energies. He has multifarious energies, many, many different energies, which can be summarized as three principal energies. That is the material energy, which is manifesting this material world, the spiritual energy, which is manifesting the spiritual world, and another spiritual energy but has marginal characteristics is the jiva, or the living entity. That's all the tiny little individual souls like us. So within each living entity there is a spirit soul who has you know, all the qualities of the Supreme Lord, but in very minute. So these are the three principal energies. So beyond this material world, the material energy, exists the Brahman effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti, or the spiritual sky. That spiritual sky is considered to be the bodily effulgence of Krishna. Now within that spiritual sky there are unlimited spiritual planets called Vaikuntha Lokas. Place Vaikuntha means place of no anxiety. Now in that, the topmost portion of that spiritual sky, there is the supreme spiritual planet of Goloka Vrindavan, and that is where Krishna resides in his original transcendental form. And from that form he expands many different expansions, and those expansions, which are unlimited, they exist in all the various different planets in the Vaikuntha Lokas. And therefore devotees who have relationships with God, they have unlimited different varieties of relationships, and therefore the Lord expands himself in all these different forms, so that there are different, you can have specific relationships with the Lord in, you know, particular moods, particular varieties. Those varieties, although they're unlimited, they can again be grouped into five principal varieties. Now in this topmost planet of Krishna Loka, there are three divisions. There is the Mathura, there is Dwarka, and there is Vrindavan. Now, in these three divisions where Krishna manifests his original form, his two-armed form, there is a proportionate increase in sweetness, what's called Madhurya, and a proportionate decrease of opulence, or what's called Aishvarya. So in the Vaikuntha planets, the predominating mood that we worship God is in awe and reverence. In other words, in Vaikuntha, everyone is very, very much aware that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, who is omnipotent, omnipresent. You know, so they have, there is a understanding the great opulent position of God, of Krishna, in his Narayan aspect. They worship him generally in the mood of service, and there is, you know, awe and reverence. Now, when we get to the Krishna Loka planet, the mood is less, there's less awe and reverence. In other words, and there's an increase. There is the introduction, first in Mathura, of this madhurya or sweetness. In other words, there the devotees begin to reduce, because they're appreciating the sweet personality and features of God, and they're loving him because he is such a beautiful, wonderful person, not because he is God. Therefore, that, you know, the mood of awe and reverence decreases a little. They're not as much concerned, you know, with his position as the Supreme Lord. They're more concerned with his lovable personality. That's the sweetness increasing. So from Mathura, you know, there is awe and reverence with some, you know, level of madhurya, sweetness. In Dwarka, which is the next, you know, another section of this Goloka Vrindavan planet, there is a mixture between the awe and reverence, the Aishvarya, and the sweetness. But when we get to Vrindavan section of Goloka Vrindavan, there is no Aishvarya at all. In other words, although Krishna still exists in his full opulence, but there it is completely insignificant, in the sense that the residents of that portion of this, of the spiritual planet Vrindavan, they are only interested in Krishna's sweet personality. Now, these different spiritual planets, this Goloka Vrindavan in its three different sections, when Krishna descends to this material world, he actually brings with him the spiritual sky, the spiritual planet. And so therefore, in Vrindavan, in India, although it is a place in this material world, but Krishna is actually manifesting his a replica, which is not different from the original spiritual world. So, as described here, we've just finished the section of the Bhagavatam where Krishna is manifesting these very, very sweet pastimes where there's not a trace of awe and reverence. The residents, you know, the friends of Krishna, they're playing with Krishna like he's just one of them. They'll jump on his back and, you know, and wrestle him to the ground. Whereas if you think someone is God, you don't jump on his back and wrestle him to the ground. But they just have this intimate, friendly relationship. So we just finished our pastime, and now we are beginning to discuss first the Mathura, and then later the Dwarka pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So these pastimes are eternal. In other words, you know, in the spiritual world, Krishna is enjoying pastimes with his friends and other different relatives and relationships. And those pastimes are eternal. And then he manifests those pastimes here, so we get to see those eternal pastimes in this universe. And when those pastimes are also rotating in all the universes, so this is not the only universe. Now, there are millions and millions of universes within the material world, within the material energy. And in each and every universe, these pastimes of the Lord are being rotated. So as soon as Krishna, for instance, lifts Govardhan Hill in this universe, and that pastime is finished, then immediately he is lifting Govardhan Hill in another universe. So these pastimes are eternal. Even when those pastimes, for instance, in this universe, the pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill, of course, is no longer manifest. But the Lord's pastimes are also eternal in the sense that they continue in the material universes in an unmanifest form. So those who are very, very elevated in spiritual consciousness, they can still see the various pastimes of the Lord happening now in Boma Vrindavan, the Vrindavan on this within this universe, still happening. So now some of the pastimes, because Krishna is manifesting his spiritual pastimes and his spiritual planets within this material universe, and so that we can relate to those pastimes, there are certain activities that he performs for our benefit so that we can relate to those pastimes, so there's a proper sequence which he may not necessarily perform in the spiritual world. So for instance, this pastime is one of those where whenever Krishna travels from one holy dham, from Vrindavan to Mathura, or from Dwarka to Mathura, like that, when he travels, that doesn't happen in the spiritual world, because Krishna in the spiritual world, he's eternally manifest in Mathura, he's eternally manifest in Dwarka, and he's eternally manifest in Vrindavan. He doesn't have to travel from one to the other. But for our understanding, so that we can, accommodate the pastimes within our mind, Krishna sometimes performs pastimes which are eternal in this, in the universes, in their manifest or unmanifest state, but they may not necessarily be performed in the spiritual sky. So here we see that Krishna is about to leave Vrindavan and go to Mathura. In the spiritual sky, he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to travel between. So, there are pastimes we see later on where Krishna is, he kidnaps the queens, and marries 16,108 queens. Now, of course, in the spiritual world, in Dwarka, Krishna does have the queens of Dwarka, but he doesn't have to kidnap them because no one, there are no demons there to, take them and lock them away in caves. So, the pastimes are eternal, but there are certain aspects which are there for our, to assist us so that it's not too inconceivable for us. So, here, Akura, now he is a devotee from Mathura. So he has a slight different mood from the residents of Vrindavan in the sense that he understands and is very aware that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has expanded in his first expansion as Balaram, who is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's very, very aware of that. And he is a pure devotee of the Lord. So it describes here that when Akura went to Vrindavan and he met Krishna, Krishna and Balaram showing us how to receive a guest, especially an exalted person like Akura, pure devotee, Vaishnava, sadhu. Krishna and Balaram treated him very, very nicely, so that he was, very comfortable and completely satisfied. And on the way to Mathura, Akura, he was, very, very eager to meet Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was very, very eager to have to, engage in reciprocation, loving reciprocations with God, with Krishna. So when he got there, that desire was fulfilled. He was able to actually see God, see the Supreme Lord, Krishna, and actually have these loving reciprocations with him. So he was feeling very, very satisfied like that. And, this is a result of his pure devotional service, that Krishna is actually reciprocating very nicely with him. So therefore it says that in the next verse, what is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune, even so those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. So, from a Krura's position, he only wants to offer the Lord some bhakti or devotional service. He wants to offer loving devotional service to the Lord. That's his only desire, and that's actually, that is a symptom of a pure devotee of the Lord. And yet, even though the devotees have no desires, there is nothing that is unattainable for them, because they're relating in such a pleasing way, and they are the reciprocation from Krishna is that he loves them proportionately. And Krishna is described here as the husband of the goddess of fortune. One name we use to denote Krishna is Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So, in this way, although the devotees are not asking for benedictions from the goddess of fortune, everything is automatically bestowed upon them. So that's the nature of this verse here. And what is being described here is the principal characteristic of pure devotional service, and it is that which we are teaching in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. If you know, for those who are very serious about spiritual life, if they want to be situated on the topmost spiritual platform, then what they are striving to achieve is this position of pure devotional service. And this International Society for Krishna Consciousness teaches that and nothing else. So all the, you know, all the devotees who come here regularly and very, very serious to you know, take the opportunity that is being presented, that's what they're looking for. So in order to understand pure devotional service, Srila Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Devotion, we have one, here we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, which are all the various pastimes of Krishna and his expansions, and how Krishna and his expansions are interreacting and relating, reciprocating with the pure devotees of the Lord. And by that, by understanding these pastimes, we can then understand the process of pure devotional service, the fruits of pure devotional service, and how to reciprocate with the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service. Now, a lot of those lessons which are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we may read Srimad Bhagavatam and we may miss, you know, a lot of what's there. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 500 years ago, he actually appeared, and he is Krishna himself also. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is Krishna, but he is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So in the spiritual world, whatever nectarian pastimes are not fulfilled in Mathura, Dwarka, Vrindavan, there is an outer portion of Goloka Vrindavan known as Svadvipa, where the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are performed, and this Krishna there is experiencing with his devotees a slightly different taste of rasa, Krishna consciousness, with his devotees, and that is in the mood of Srimati Radharani, which is very, very special. Anyway, we won't go into that just yet. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appears with his Svetadvit Dham in also a place called Mayapur, Navadvit Dham. So in the same way that the Vrindavan Dham in India is non-different from Vrindavan in the spiritual sky, so Navadvit Dham is also non-different from Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is Krishna himself, and 500 years ago He actually taught his principal disciples, being the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, all the essential teachings of the of Krishna consciousness. And then Rupa Goswami, he was the leader of the six Goswamis, he took those teachings, and then gathering references from all the Vedic scriptures, he compiled specific books for you and I, which help us to very systematically and scientifically understand the process of Krishna consciousness or pure devotional service, bhakti yoga, and how to develop one's pure love of God. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then the what do they call that study, something that's after that, what's that word? What is it? Postgraduate, yeah, corollary, wasn't it? You know, it's like a extend. It's, well, there's another word. It's like postgraduate. There's graduate. There's Bhagavad Gita. Entrance is Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam is graduate. And I think Chaitanya Charitamrita, postgraduate. And with the corollary literature such as Nectar Devotion. So, in the Nectar Devotion, there is one verse which describes that Rupa Goswami, in the very beginning of Nectar Devotion, he sums up what is pure devotional service. And he describes that pure devotional service is activities, devotional activities, which are executed specifically in relationship to Krishna, favorably, and without any motivation, and which are not tinged by any karma, you know, desires for fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. So this, that particular verse is what they call the Paribhasa verse of the Nectar Devotion. In other words, it is the key verse of the Nectar Devotion. The whole Nectar Devotion is actually based upon that particular verse. The Nectar Devotion, all the verses are centered around that central theme. So, understanding that particular verse helps us to understand the nature of devotees like Akura, who have this pure Sudha Bhakti, which is the mood of pure devotional service. So if we take the first part, that Krishna consciousness is a cultivation of devotional service, and cultivation means activities. So in Krishna consciousness, it is not a process of silent meditation. It's a process where there are activities, and those activities are performed with the mind, the words, and the body. And those activities are favourable. They're in relationship to Krishna. So in one sense, we can say, well, everything is Krishna. We can say, you know, this table is Krishna. The microphone is Krishna. You know, everything is Krishna. What's that? Bhagavatam is Krishna. We can say I am Krishna. You can say the flowers. You can say in one sense, but the verse points out that actually must be in relationship to Krishna, the person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his expansions. So particularly that's the way we understand that verse. For instance, although everything is Krishna because it is manifested from his different energies, but bhakti is devotional activities which are dedicated to the person who is the source of all those different energies. And therefore we're concerned with Krishna and those things related to Krishna. Just like devotees are very interested in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Why? Is because Krishna was there and he spoke the Bhagavad Gita. He spoke very, very important philosophy of how one can understand the Supreme Lord and how one can understand Bhakti Yoga. So devotees are very interested in Kurukshetra because it's related to Krishna. But otherwise, devotees are not interested in battlefields. So one may say, well, you know, you devotees, you're interested in the battlefield. I'm interested in this battlefield where the Battle of Bannockburn happened, you know, in Scotland, Ireland, wherever it was, you know. So what is the difference? That is Krishna, you know, that is also, Kurukshetra is Krishna, you know, Bannockburn, that is also related to Krishna. But although his, you know, it is his material energy, but Krishna really didn't have anything to do with that battle. He never appeared on that battlefield. He never spoke, you know, Bhagavad Gita on that battlefield. And therefore the devotees are not, they're not just interested in battlefields, they're interested in Kurukshetra because Krishna was there. So it's specifically, devotional service specifically means in relationship with Krishna and his different expansions and his pure devotees. In the same way that, you know, we may say, give this food to the man over there with the weapons. Now, we're not interested in the weapons. The weapons are important because they're related to the man. Give this food to the man with the weapons. But what we're interested in is the person. So we're interested in Krishna and all those things naturally related with Krishna. Otherwise, the devotees, you know, they don't just offer devotional service just anywhere without a specific relationship with Krishna. So that's very important to understand that particular point. And devotional service, another very important factor of devotional service is that it is favourable. Now, just like Kamsa, see, some people may say, yes, I'm God conscious, but their God consciousness may not be favourable. Here, Akura is bringing back Krishna to Mathura because Kamsa has arranged for Akura. You bring him back. And what is Kamsa's plan? Kamsa's thinking, when Krishna comes back to Mathura, because there was a prophecy that this eighth child of Devaki, being Krishna, would kill me, Akura, you go there, you bring him back, and I will kill him. Who had these wrestlers and powerful elements and elephants and soldiers, and when he comes here we will kill him. Now Kamsa was always absorbed in Krishna, always thinking. From morning to night he thought of Krishna when he was eating. Krishna, I'll kill him, you know. When he was sleeping, Krishna, I'll kill him. He'd have a nightmare. Krishna would kill him. When he was walking, when he was sitting, everything he did, he was thinking of Krishna. So that's definitely Krishna consciousness, but it's not bhakti. So what we're describing here is bhakti. Bhakti means Sudha bhakti, or pure devotional service. So therefore, Kamsa is not performing bhakti. Still, he's absorbed in Krishna. Now, to give modern day examples of that, sometimes people read the Bhagavad Gita, and after reading Bhagavad Gita, they decide that, you know, I don't want people going to a temple and giving everything to Krishna. What I would like them to do is to offer everything to me. Now, if I can somehow remove Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita, then I can, you know, propound my philosophy and be the big, big centre of attention, and everything will come back to me. So many people, they actually try and kill Krishna by removing him from the Bhagavad Gita. And therefore you see, you know, when Srila Prabhupada came to America in 1966, there was something like 300, you know, somewhere between about 300, 600 different editions of the Bhagavad Gita, and practically none of them accepted Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of them had somehow removed Krishna from the Bhagavad Gita. with different sort of, you know, word juggling. That, you know, it's not Krishna you have to... When Krishna runs to me and always think of me and become my devotee, he's not saying Krishna the person, he's saying the Krishna within all of us. Because we are old, everything is God, so we are Krishna. So therefore, you know, there's no need to go to the temples or to, you know, read Srimad Bhagavatam or this or that. You know, you can worship anyone. In fact, you know, Ramakrishna, who was, I think he was president of India at one stage, but he actually said that, you know, that Krishna and Ram that appeared before, I am them. I am that Krishna, I am that Ram. See? So, you know, Krishna zero, he doesn't really exist. Sort of imaginary, you know. The Krishna, the person that was there 5,000 years ago, doesn't exist. You know, it was a manifestation of the material energy, and it's gone now. You know, what exists permanently is this impersonal Brahman, which is within all of us, and therefore, in one sense, we're all God. You know, but ultimately, we're all, you know, when we realize our real godly nature, we understand that we're completely impersonal, and we have no personality and no activities. There's no bhakti, there's no Bhagavan, there's no, you know, bhaktas. So in this way they kill everything. So, you know, these are, as Srila Prabhupada will put it, this is Kamsa's philosophy. Not Kamsa existed 5,000 years ago. They exist, you know, very still today, and they're always trying to kill Krishna, always trying to, you know, take him out of the Bhagavad Gita and make him into zero, into nothing. Sorry? Yes, Radha Krishna. Thank you. So, this, you know, so they're Krishna conscious because they will tell you, and you have to be. That's why it's very important to understand these verses, because if you don't know, you might think, well, Krishna consciousness means to think of Krishna. But Rupa Goswami is saying, yes, but it must be in relationship to the personal Krishna. And also, so that, you know, many people say, oh, I have Krishna consciousness, but how can that be favourable? How can making Krishna zero be favourable? That is certainly not favourable. It is a Kamsa philosophy. So that is a very important aspect of pure devotional service. And the other... Srila Prabhupada, he in one sentence in the Nectar Devotion, he says, the definition of pure devotional service is that one is engaged constantly in devotional activities in Krishna consciousness which are favourable. So there is constant engagement. Now, that is confirming this verse. Yes. So this verse is summing up those verses of Srimad Bhagavatam into one neat little verse. So all those points there, which that's in the first canto, second chapter, right? That verse, text number 6. So in order for devotional service to be constant, uninterrupted, the devotees avoid any other activity. So that's pure devotional service. That means that that person has no other desires. In other words, if someone has some other particular reason for approaching God, or, you know, they just have other particular agendas, then their activities are not considered devotional. What we wanted is that my only activity in relationship to pleasing God favourably. So therefore, devotees don't engage in karma, fruitive activities, and they don't engage in jnana or mental speculation. And now, karma is fruitive activities, to give an example, just like Yudhisthira Maharaj actually engage in this pastime with Krishna in order to show us this particular. Yudhishthira Maharaj is actually a pure devotee of the Lord, but the Lord arranges particular pastimes to demonstrate this particular point. When Krishna asked Yudhishthira, see, because according to fruit of activities, one is completely pious. And you cannot do anything which is impious. That is the nature of fruit of activities. Everything is completely pious. Good activities. Now when Krishna, when the battle of Kurukshetra was underway, there was one particular person which was on the opposite side, which is very difficult to kill. And Krishna, he was actually undefeated. Krishna, wanting to put his pure devotees, back in their rightful position in the kingdom, which had been stolen from them, he wanted to give that kingdom knowing that they would teach pure devotional service to all the world, and all the world will benefit. Whereas what was happening was these demoniac persons had seized power, a scenario we know all too well in this modern day, and just caused trouble for everyone. So in this battle, they're all wanting to kill each other. So Krishna knew that in order to kill this particular person, they would have to tell him that his son had died, Ashwatthama, I think his name, and if he thought his son had died, therefore he would lose heart and they would be able to defeat him. So, he asked Yudhishthira, because everyone knew that Yudhishthira was the emblem of morality. He would never tell a lie. If Yudhishthira said it, he would definitely believe it. But Yudhishthira wouldn't tell them. Anyway, there was a trick. And, the sentence came out or another. But Yudhishthira wouldn't tell that lie. So that is an example of where one is, considering fruit of activities. In other words, in that sense, Yudhishthira is, showing us the nature of someone absorbed in, karma, is that I've got the opportunity here to please God, but I might miss out. I might miss out because I might do something impious and I might have to suffer for it. Now, a pure devotee doesn't think like that. A pure devotee thinks, if the Supreme Lord asks me to do something, I'll do that. Whatever. Now, doing something for the Supreme Lord is the supreme pious activity. It is all good. But if there is a lack of faith, one may sometimes consider it to be impious. See? Sometimes, we may not be able to properly discriminate with our intelligence. To give an example, if we have children, sometimes you may have to get angry with them. You may have to, a little punishment. No one wants to, cause children harm. Someone may say, you've caused that child to cry. How impious. But the parent knows that sometimes it is not impious, because ultimately the parent is acting, hopefully, for the benefit of the child, and then the child may have to cry, little punishment, little chastisement. It's not impious, it seems impious. Someone who doesn't understand things very well and has a very limited understanding, all they'll see is, you caused that child to cry, you are a bad man. Like that. So, in the same sense, serving God is never impious, but sometimes we may consider it like that. Krishna was acting for the ultimate good, and with Krishna's broad intelligence, of course, he can see, more than what we can. He knew that you just do what I'm saying, everyone will benefit. I know past, present, and future. I know this person's previous lives, for millions of lives, he will benefit, you will benefit in the best possible way. That is the intelligence. But if we're absorbed in, fruit of activities, we may think, oh, I might miss out here. I might do something impious and have to suffer. See? And therefore, we don't engage in the service of God. So, in this way, our devotional activities are not constant. See, they're interrupted. But at the same time, if we are performing activities, fruit of activities in this world, which are supporting our pure devotional service, then they are considered not fruit of activities, but part of the process of pure devotional service. So, for instance, everyone has to survive. We eat, have to work. But that is not fruit of activities. It's fruit of activities. When a person considers, I'm going to do something for my profit, I will take a little bit of my profit and offer that to the Lord to purify myself of sinful reactions and to please the Lord, and then I will enjoy the profit. That's karma yoga. If a devotee is always considering how to please Krishna, and in order to do that they maintain their bodies, they work a job, you know, they protect themselves when there's danger, they do all those things, that is considered part of the process of pure devotional service. It is not considered that they're engaged in, you know, karma misra bhakti. So, similarly, jnana. Now, jnana yoga means that one is very busy speculating and word juggling, trying to understand the absolute truth, but without understanding everything in relationship to Krishna. Generally, the result of such speculation is one comes to an impersonal conception of God. So that is the jnana process. But when a devotee studies, they study Bhagavad Gita, they study Srimad Bhagavatam, nectar devotion, they analyse the material world, they analyse spirit, they analyse the false ego, that is not considered, that is part of the process of pure devotional service. If, you know, the goal of that research, in the beginning, a little speculation, you know, what is this, what is that? If the goal is to understand Krishna, that is actually part of the process of pure devotional service. Devotees should not think that, you know, free from jnana or mental speculation or the pursuit of knowledge means that I should give up the pursuit of knowledge of understanding Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, you know, in many different ways pointed out that it's very important, you know, for devotees to understand first what is the nature of God and what is our relationship, because if we don't take that endeavour to understand, what will happen is we'll have no interest in Krishna. If we don't take the trouble to learn how God is in the world, the lessons he's taught us, how we can relate to him in devotional service, if we don't take that time to understand those things, then what will happen is that we'll just neglect Krishna altogether. We'll neglect devotional service. We'll never, you know, even be able to approach the path of pure devotional service. And then, because we will have, you know, we will not be thinking about the Supreme Lord and our relationship, we'll be thinking about everything else, that then it actually leads us to mental speculation. If we don't study, actually if you don't study Bhagavad Gita, if you don't study, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam, you're bound to, all that's left is mental speculation. You have to think of something. But studying this is mental speculation. We should never consider this pursuit of knowledge of God consciousness to be something that should be given up as, you know, pursuit of knowledge, oh, this is not bhakti yoga, like that. This is, you know, Rupa Goswami's verse describing the nature of pure devotional service, which should be unmotivated, favourable, constant engagement in devotional service, and, you know, the symptom of that is that it is free from karma yoga and jnana yoga. And that is the nature of here Akrura's devotional mood. Now, just one final point here is that Akrura, sometimes you also see the term mixed devotees applied to devotees of Mathura and Dwarka, whereas the residents of, you know, Vrindavan are considered Kevala or pure devotees. So one should be very careful not to make the mistake that when the pure devotees on the platform of prema, pure love, they have Suddha Bhakti, they have pure devotional service, but sometimes it's called mixed devotional service when, you know, like in Mathura, there is some mixture of awe and reverence, and then, you know, in Dwarka also, a little less awe and reverence, but it's mixed with the Madhurya aspect. In Vrindavan, there's no concept of, you know, the opulence of God, therefore it's called Kevala, unmixed or pure devotional service. But all of those devotees, although it's, you know, Mathura Dwarka is sometimes called mixed devotion, it's Suddha Bhakti, but it's, you know, it's, it may not be Kevala Bhakti. But we should not consider that mixed devotional service the same as mixing it with the process of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, where devotional service is actually mixed with the modes of material nature. So we should be careful not to confuse the terms there. So, and by executing a devotional service as described here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the devotees have no particular desires, they serve Krishna and serve him favourable, and yet everything that is possibly attainable is attained by those devotees. So one may think, you know, why would I take up this process where I'm not going to, you know, desire anything for my own personal good, and I'm just always thinking of Krishna, just doing everything for God, and I'm never looking after my own interests. That is not, you know, that doesn't sound very appealing. But we see that the nature of pure devotional service, of bhakti, Suddha Bhakti, is that everything that can be achieved by any other process, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, that is automatically achieved without separate endeavour. They don't have to endeavour for it. He doesn't have to endeavour to engage in pious activities and, you know, to get some higher elevated position. He's just constantly engaged in serving Krishna, and by that he is automatically pious and automatically... But whereas those engaged in fruitive activities, they may, you know, the topmost result that they can get is to go to the heavenly planets. But the devotees, by, you know, not engaging any fruitive activities, we may say, okay, you know, they don't get to go to the heavenly planets, but they get to go to the spiritual sky. The, you know, facilities which are there in the heavenly planets, you know, the facilities of the world are eternal. They're unlimited. They're not like, you know, all the opulence and pleasure of the heavenly planets are like a little twig. They had no real value. You know, to a pure devotee of the Lord, going to the heavenly planets, enjoying all that wonderful opulence, is just like a twig on the street. You walk past it, you don't even look at it. It just has, it's not even attractive. It's insignificant. It's nothing. You know, their side is, so it's not like they're missing out by not engaging in fruitive activities. By cultivating Krishna consciousness, it's not as if they're missing out on understanding of, you know, coming to the point of full knowledge. Because by then, they've found on the knowledge of the jnanis. The jnanis, their knowledge only takes them up to, you know, impersonal understanding of Brahman anyway. The devotees, that understanding is there, you know, very shortly, you know, after being a devotee, but they go beyond that, beyond the Paramatma realization to the realization of Bhagavan. And, you know, mystic yogis, the siddhis and the mystic yoga, the devotees are not interested in those, and yet, automatically, they have Yogisvara, the Supreme Lord, who is the personification of all mystic opulences, is personally looking after them. They, you know, a devotee may not be able to walk on water, but, you know, whatever they have to do is arranged nicely by the mystic. So they don't have to walk on water, nor do they have to, you know, undergo those difficult activities. Why do you think Krishna has, you know, created all these aeroplanes? Simply so the devotees don't have to undergo the mystic yoga process, and still they can travel all over the world preaching Krishna consciousness. It's all arranged. Prabhupada used to tell a story how, you know, there was one yogi, and he went away from his village when he was young for many, many years, and then when he came back, he was a mystic yogi, and all the village gathered around, oh, what have you achieved, you know, a lifetime in the Himalayas? I can walk on water. And, oh, like this. And there's one person in the crowd who said, oh, that's worth, you know, 2 paisa. That's not very, not very. And the yogi, what do you mean? Such austerity, you know, I can now walk on water. Yes, this is not very significant. For 2 paisa, I can pay that boatman, I can go across the water as well. You've wasted your whole life. So it's not as if the devotees miss out on anything by engaging in pure devotional service. Automatically, everything and what the karmis, jnanis and astanga yogis cannot achieve is automatically achieved. So therefore we should take the pure devotional service and be very confident that although, you know, I have no, you know, we have no particular desires for anything else but to please Krishna, you will certainly not be the loser by taking to that process. So I'll leave it there if anyone has any quick questions or comments.